we welcome you in to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven, the first one of September, and as we make this, you know, final stretch run, we didn't bring anybody else in to, you know, expand our rosters, so you're stuck with me, Daniel Shoftoff from C70 at the Bat and at C70, and, as always, Tara Wellman from Bird Seeds and at Tara Wellman on Twitter. Tara, we were talking, it's been an interesting week. I think that's probably an understatement. The Cardinals split with the Brewers. They take three of four, not the three that we necessarily expected, but three of four from the Giants. They're three games out of the wild card. They traded an untradeable pitcher. They've brought up people. I was writing something earlier that I think got lost, but I was saying that I think finally the Cardinals may have made you happy and picked a direction. They seem to have a little bit more focus, if you will, about what they want this team to look like, at least for the rest of this year and maybe even to next year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that, and we've kind of said this all along, if the thing that you pick is to sort of set yourself up for next season or the year after, that's not necessarily the thing that people are going to really be happy about when there's a sliver of a chance at making the postseason this year. It takes away from that feeling of really going for it. And we talked a little bit about it last week in that I think it's probably as hard on the current players as anything to kind of feel, and you heard a little bit of this from Lance Lynn this week, like the organization has basically decided, yeah, you did a nice job at sort of keeping it close and staying in within reach of the postseason, but we're not going to do anything to help you. That's maybe a tough pill to swallow for the team, but it does clarify a little bit you know, sort of what they want from the rest of this year in getting a feel for what needs to be done over the off season and going into next year. So, yeah, I have been harping on it for several weeks now in that I feel like they just needed to pick something instead of just treading water and hoping that all the answers to all the questions just fell into their laps. And while I don't know that August was as busy as we were maybe led to believe it would be, they definitely made some choices at the very end of the month and starting September this week that provided that clarity that I think we've been looking for.
Yeah, it's it was definitely, if it wasn't a busy August, it was probably a momentous August just because of the power or the impact of the trades that did get made. You know, none of us expected Mike Leake to move anywhere. You know, the fact that tweet came out like about an hour before the trade was actually done, that the Cardinals were, you know, getting close to moving him, was just like, you know, completely out of the blue. Because when you looked at, you know, obviously Leake had struggled over the last bit, although as I'm kind of working on a post, I don't know that his tenure in St. Louis was as bad overall as I think some people are going to think it was. Mainly clouded by the last month or so. But the way he was pitching, the what was left on his contract, the no-trade bit, all of that just made it feel like, well, the Cardinals had made their bet here and they were going to have to, you know, lie in it. But, you know, $17 million goes a long way. And I've got to wonder, and I'll ask you maybe what your opinion is on this. I kind of wonder if Mike Leake ever really fit in to St. Louis, ever really, I don't want to say wanted to be here, but, you know, originally, you know, when he signed the free agent signing 2 years ago, the Cardinals were his second choice. He wanted to be in Arizona because that was where his family was. His dad had, you know, had his, I think, paralysis. I think that's what it was after, you know, and he wanted to be close to home. And the Diamondbacks didn't have a place for him, didn't really, couldn't take him. So he wound up signing with his second choice, the Cardinals, which was fair because the Cardinals were always being the second choice of everybody else. So, but, you know, we heard some talk about him and this year about, you know, like Lance Lynn would say, well, he just, you know, had to get settled in. He's going to be, you know, really kind of be part of the team this year. But, just doesn't seem, you know, from the outside looking in, and we're obviously not in the clubhouse, it just doesn't seem like he necessarily meshed entirely. Now, obviously, Lance Lynn, Tommy Pham both had some very strong comments after his trade, so he obviously was not just a total outsider or anything. But I wonder if that just led to him saying, hey, if you can get me out on the West Coast, I'm great with moving.
Yeah, I think in many respects, people will be able to take that and sort of reinforce some of the clubhouse dynamic rumors that have been out there. You know, that there are some maybe cliques to some extent, and that there are guys that seem to be the most outspoken or the most personable are the ones that we hear about and that are most often interviewed because they're good interviews. But that there are those other guys that just kind of clock in and clock out every day, and they might not they might not be the personality, they might not be the friend that that some of these guys are to each other in the clubhouse. I also think that and to your point about him having preferred to be in Arizona, you know, we talk a lot about the business side of baseball from a front office standpoint, but the players approach it that way in many respects as well. And while I think there are a lot of guys in the Cardinals clubhouse, and I would say probably the same for any team, guys that want to be there and want to be a part of what's going on. I mean, we saw how Dexter Fowler came in and really just owned the transition to being a part of not just the team, because that's who was writing his paycheck, but the community and the fan base and a lot of those things. I don't know that Mike Leake approached it that same way. This was a job, and this is the place where he was going to work every day, and he's going to punch in and punch out and do his job the best that he can, which may not always have been up to the level of expectation of the fan base, but he was there to do a job. And I don't know that there was really that sort of, I really want to embrace this and invest myself in not just doing my job well, but in becoming a part of this entire St. Louis baseball thing. So whether that's just because he's a quieter type guy or because he didn't really see it that way, I can certainly see how he wasn't going to be the guy who was real disappointed to leave St. Louis if a better option came available.
Yeah, it's the no trade clause was not because he wanted to be, you know, locked into St. Louis. It was the idea that he wanted that stability, that he wanted to you know, he would be here or he would be wherever he wanted to be. It wasn't because he wanted to make sure that he was in St. Louis and could set down roots or anything of that nature. So, no, that's very interesting, because you're right. It is, it's personality to some degree, but to think about the fact that, yeah, Mike Leake came in and he said he should have thought, hey, I'm going to be here for 5 years, you know, what can I do? We didn't hear that. I mean, you know, even, and I know, I think some of these, you know, things are set up by the team and things, but, you know, the people from the hospital or groups that come through, you know, that are Waino's winners or yeah, Piscotty's whatever. And I don't think there was one of those for Mike Leake. And for the fact that he was here for 2 years, he didn't make that much of an impression outside of what he did on the mound. And that's fine. But it is interesting to look at that. So, you know, again, Lynn, Pham, both kind of thought, hey, this is a white flag, but it felt like from our point of view, and maybe this is why players are no longer GMs these days, it was almost an addition by subtraction, because Leake had not been pitching well. And even if Jack Flaherty came up and did not pitch well, you know, you were still getting basically the same thing. And if not, if he actually came up and, you know, gave you a better chance, then, you know, the Cardinals are a better team because of it. I know it's difficult for players to see past the friendships that they have, but, I mean, did that make the team better overall, do you think?
I think that that's still to be determined to some extent, because there's a lot of potential with the minor leaguers that we'll get a chance to see, but there's certainly no guarantee. And I think from the perspective of Lance Lynn or of Tommy Pham, you would like to think that your front office believes in the push you're making to try to get to the postseason enough that if they make a move and it involves someone off the major league roster, that you're going to get something in return that makes you better. And that there's some sort of guarantee of that. Obviously there's never any guarantee in baseball, but you get the point. Mm-hmm. Someone that's a little more proven or a piece that sort of fills in that missing part of the puzzle, that you see right away, you think, all right, this is them making an investment in us. This seemed a lot more, like, all right, we're going to just move on from here and see what we have to offer. Whether that makes us better this season or not, it is fine, but that's not really the point. And that's not necessarily a bad thing either. Like I said, to begin with, we've been kind of hoping that they would pick one direction or the other for quite a while now. And I think that this is the beginning of that choice. But that doesn't mean it won't actually be better for them this season too. I just think that I can see where Lance Lynn or Tommy Pham would be coming from, in that it feels like the front office saying, yeah, if you get there, that's great, but we're not going to do anything to help you. As opposed to, we're going to go out and make a trade and give you some support, give you a little help to try to get you over the hump.
Yeah, and I can see that. And we obviously, as fans, because we are not as emotionally invested in these players as friends, but more as what it's entertaining us, as harsh as that may be, you know, sometimes we just want to see somebody new, somebody that, you know, hopefully can bring a little bit of excitement and some, you know, maybe a boost to the team, and we're going to see that difference in the players too. We did see Jack Flaherty get a chance to come up, but before we get to that point, though, I think that the first thing most people thought with the trade of Leak was that the Cardinals would now be interested in re-signing Lance Lynn, that they were freeing up this spot, so that allowed them to sign Lynn and still have a spot for a Weaver or a Flaherty or somebody like that. But John Mozeliak comes out and says, you know, basically, we're going to get younger pitching-wise. Lance Lynn comes out and says, hey, they still haven't talked to me. So, you know, I'm kind of, I just work here. It just feels like that's not going to be the case. Was that a little surprising?
First of all, I have used "I just work here" so many times this week. So many times when people ask me questions that I don't have good answers to, I've said, "I don't know, I just work here." So thank you, Lance Lynn, for yet another gem of a quotable interview. No, I think that also gave a little bit of clarity, and maybe not in a good way. I think that... Well, two things. First of all, it seemed to make very clear that the organization has no interest in re-signing Lance Lynn, which in many ways shouldn't be surprising. I think we've kind of seen the writing on the wall all season, and knowing that Lance Lynn, especially if he was able to put together a strong year, was going to be able to get a lot more in free agency than the Cardinals were going to be willing to pay. I think the way the year has developed made us sort of think, okay, well, what would this team look like if they did keep Lance Lynn? And personally, I think, you talk about personalities, Lance Lynn is one that has been sort of that bulldog kind of grit through it and just go get the job done kind of guy, who also has sort of established a reputation as who he is in St. Louis and who he is in the clubhouse and who he's going to be on the mound. And in a potential rotation with so much uncertainty and so much youth, that constant could be a very nice addition. But again, we felt all season that the odds of Lance Lynn returning to St. Louis were very slim. So in that regard, it shouldn't be that much of a surprise. I think hearing about it as directly from Lance Lynn as we did, who was obviously not happy with the way things went down last week, I think sort of reiterated the seemingly ongoing communication issues that this front office has with the players. And I realize there's no obligation for them to say, hey, here's what we're thinking, or what are you thinking, or hey, here's a heads up, we just traded someone. There's no obligation for them to tell anyone anything, but there's also sort of this mutual understanding then that there's going to be a bit of an impasse when it comes to the players and the people in the front office, and there's maybe not going to be a reputation of really strong communication that goes back and forth. So I think for the front office, whether it's Mike Gersh or John Mozeliak, to essentially say we're not re-signing Lance Lynn to the public without ever having approached that conversation with Lance Lynn to say, hey, look, we know what you have meant to this team and what you have done this year is great, but we have this plan and it involves getting younger and we want you to be able to move on and get the paycheck and get the opportunity that you deserve while we continue to make ourselves better. That took me 15 seconds to say. It's not like they haven't had the time. So if they've made a determination about what they are or are not going to do with Lance Lynn, it doesn't seem that absurd to me to communicate that to Lance Lynn's people, if nothing else, so that he's not kind of left hanging in the balance or trying to answer all these questions from reporters who assume he has some sort of knowledge that he doesn't have. So while it's maybe not surprising to hear this near confirmation that the Cardinals are not going to try to re-sign Lance Lynn, it is still frustrating to me that this organization seems to continue to have this problem with just telling the people that it employs what they're going to do. And it doesn't have to be this big drawn out announcement. Just have a conversation.
Yeah, because I mean, I can get what maybe some thinking would be is we don't want to we don't want to come to Lance Lynn at the beginning of the season and say, look, you're probably not going to resign you at the end of the year because you kind of start burning the bridge. But,
sure.
You know, the fact that you don't communicate at all is pretty much burning that bridge anyway.
Go ahead. I completely agree with that, but once you start saying it publicly,
oh yeah,
then it's not really, you have no reason not to have that conversation. And in my opinion, that conversation should happen before you start saying it publicly.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree.
As a matter of courtesy, not yeah. Because I get it. It's a business. There's no obligation, but
what I'm saying is, I mean, even if you take that out, I mean, you know, you come into September, especially to a guy like Lance Lynn, I mean, at the end of the year, and you say, okay, let's start talking about an extension, he's going to say, nope.
Yeah.
You've had all year long. You've had we're not going to start this
right.
process now. Again, that's even beforehand. So, you know, why there really isn't any reason to come and say, hey, look, you know, glad to have you. You know, we are going to get younger. We need to free up some spots because we got young guys coming. You know, you're going to be you're just all the stuff you said. And you're right. It wouldn't take him very long. It'd probably take a longer 15 seconds because Mo uses a lot of big words.
Sure.
You know, arbitrage has to fit in there somewhere. But, you know, and somewhere along the way you say, hey, look, you know, and you could say that in like, you know, June, July, especially if you've kind of figured out what your plan is. And I don't, being that they haven't talked to Lynn, it's not like they've just decided all of a sudden because this season's been kind of a weird one. That they've decided, oh, we're going to go younger. That's been the plan for probably 2 or 3 years, you know. So it's not like it's a big surprise. So, yeah, not having that conversation. And you could even say, hey, this is our plan right now. Now, if something happens, you know, if Wainwright retires, yes, we want to get back to you. you know, we'd like to, keep that door cracked, if you know nothing else. You know, and if you have that conversation, Lynn is at least possibly going to say, okay, yeah, you know, I'm going to look for otherwhere, but if something, you know, if y'all need to come back to me, come back to me. We'll talk. It's a better footing. But like you said, the communication has been an issue for them quite a bit. It seems like we hear that all the time. So,
well, and it feels like just to continue your point, if the Cardinals were waiting to have a conversation with Lance Lynn because they weren't entirely sure how the season was going to shake out, it seems like they've sort of eliminated their chances now, because I can't imagine many circumstances where Lance Lynn would want to re-sign with St. Louis now. So by waiting and poorly communicating their intentions, they've created the situation they were potentially trying to avoid, and that is not having the opportunity to bring Lance Lynn back should they need to. So it seems to me like there are a lot of people in very important positions who don't really have a firm grasp on how that communication system should work, in order to make sure that, look, we've talked about guys who chose not to sign in St. Louis and whether or not it was simply for the money or because there were other reasons they didn't want to sign there. Well, when you have a guy like Lance Lynn, who now is making quite public the fact that the process has not been mutually beneficial, other guys are going to hear about that. Other representation is going to hear about that and come at the prospect of signing in St. Louis with a different attitude. So I think it complicates things with the players who are currently on the roster and in the clubhouse who feel like the organization, from the front office's perspective, just doesn't take them into account in some of the ways that they communicate these decisions. But then it can have a bigger impact down the road if this continues to be a repetitive problem and word gets out, basically.
Well, I mean, you know, we think about last year at the end of the year when, you know, Matt Holliday basically had to go to Mo's office and say, what's the plan? You know, here it is, you know, a week before the season's over. You know, are you signing? Are you picking my option up? What are we doing here? And, you know, that was about the only way he could get a straight answer. I'm a little surprised that either side hasn't used the manager as a go-between, you know, either Mo talking to Matheny and say, hey, you know, kind of let Lynn know where we're at, or Lynn going to Mike and say, hey, can you tell me what the front office is doing? And maybe they did, maybe they didn't, you know, maybe it didn't really matter. I'm a little surprised maybe that, you know, they haven't tried to use Matheny, because who should, I mean, that's kind of what his, not really his job, I don't guess, to be that middleman, but in some ways he is, because, you know, he's kind of got the ear of the players, but he's also got a line to mow more than the players do, so...
Right, if there was a person to talk to about that sort of situation, you would think...
Yeah.
You would think it would be the manager.
And again, they may have, you know, one side or the other, you know, didn't, or, you know, Lynn, you know, Mo and might have not given Matheny a whole lot to work with either. I mean, I don't want to think this is another thing that can be put on the feet of Mike Matheny, because there's plenty of things that that pile up there, and this is not one of them, but I don't know. It's very interesting. This is not the only person, longtime Cardinal, that seemed to have a little bit of future determined. Kevin Segrist, who has been a reliever since, I think, 2012 with the Cardinals, a guy that's, you know, obviously given plenty to this team, most notably his right arm, or his left arm, was waived, designated for assignment to free up spot in the 40-man as he came off from the DL. And again, I'm not saying that Kevin Segrist deserves some sort of, you know, final, you know, wave to the crowd at Busch Stadium, and I get that that's... but they did it a little bit weird. I mean, yes, there's a whole bunch of lefties in the bullpen right now, but, you know, Kevin Segrist had done a lot for this team, and apparently healthy enough that the Phillies took a chance on him. When you have other guys, you know, again, I look at Mike Myers, and still haven't figured out why he's still on this 40-man. if you had to cut somebody, you would have thought he would have been maybe more likely than a guy that, has been, somewhat effective even this year. That just seemed a little bit odd.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of the continuation of a lot of really odd things this season. And some of that coming in the form of, I guess feeling like moves have been made that were almost made just to make a move. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because they either made the current roster better or because they answered questions about the future. And I think in many respects, that's how I feel about this choice. Because it was kind of sudden. It was unexpected. There seemed to be some other more logical reactions to needing a spot on the 40-man. And I think that it's a bit out of the ordinary for the Cardinals front office to move that quickly on someone that's been such a significant piece of that bullpen over the last several years. That's not necessarily a bad thing that they were willing to make a move like that's that extreme if it was necessary, but that it's just to say it was surprising, and I'm not entirely sure what it did. Mm-hmm. And that's where I go back to this idea that this season there seemed to have been some moves that were just to make a move, not necessarily related to a particular plan or a particular intention moving forward.
Yeah, I will say that I argued significantly last off season, before and after the 40-man was set for the Rule 5, why the heck Jose Martinez was still on this roster, because there was no particular reason to be, and I would say that I was pretty wrong on that. I mean, the Cardinals had some idea of what they had with Jose Martinez, and so there may be more to, this move, or Mike Meyer staying on the 40-man, or whatever, than we know, but it just seemed like, there was a decent chance he would be non-tendered in the offseason, and maybe they thought letting him go now, he'd be more likely to pick up with the team that would take him versus having to, find a job while everybody else was scrambling for a job. I don't know. But it was a little bit strange. And obviously Seacrest was not having the greatest year. I mean, his ERA was about 5. But you just have to wonder if he ever really recovered from pitching 81 games 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and you see him, and then you look at others like Seth Maness. You just worry about what Matt Bowman's going to look like. It's tough to see all these arms getting used so significantly in times where they really don't need to be.
It seems like same song, different verse when we talk about the bullpen, because it continues to be, I think, the biggest weakness for Mike Matheny as a manager, which is somewhat surprising to me as a former catcher, just because you would think he'd be a little bit more in tune to the way those guys work out there. But I think two things. I think, first of all, Mike Matheny... He has some trust issues, and perhaps rightfully so as far as this season's bullpen has gone. But you kind of compound that issue when you let the bullpen get as bad as it was this year. And that's where I sort of go back and forth on this bullpen issue for the usage that Mike Matheny chooses, but also the makeup of the bullpen that John Mozeliak has chosen. And I think it's difficult in many situations where the Cardinals are in close games and those bullpen innings matter so much to be versatile in your usage of the bullpen in order to save some of those arms. Because you pretty much for a long time this season knew that if it wasn't Trevor Rosenthal or Matt Bowman, you were not going to get outs without giving up runs. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, I can see where Mike Matheny would sort of get stuck wanting to go back to the guys who have been able to get the job done before. So without some additions to that bullpen, his options were quite limited at times this year. However, this is not a new problem. As you mentioned, Seth Maness, and we saw Trevor Rosenthal 3 years ago. And you know, this is a continuation of a trend that was only magnified by the weaknesses of the makeup of the bullpen this year. And you're right. I think Bowman has been less and less effective the more he's been used, which shouldn't be shocking. And, you know, then you're dealing with a bullpen that doesn't have a Trevor Rosenthal in it because of his injury. And you know how much he's pitched in the last couple of years. So you see this happening again and again, and I think it has to become a concern moving forward that you have more than two or three guys that the manager is willing to go to who can get the job done so that you don't end up with someone that has pitched in half of the games of the season, mm-hmm. And in most of those cases in high pressure innings.
And I think you're right. Obviously the bullpen has burned him a number of times this year. But you know, and on the flip side of that, there are times where, you know, they weren't high pressure situations. So why are you bringing him in? Like today, Bowman didn't come into the game. But the Cardinals were up 7-2 in the eighth inning, and then Dan McLaughlin is talking, and he says, Matt Bowman warming up in the bullpen. And I'm like, it's a 5-run game. Why is Mike Bowman? Now, Alcantara went down there as well, and it may have been that the Matheny wanted Bowman getting a loose in case Alcantara struggled, which is fair given that the rookie is and making his debut, all that kind of stuff. But still, you had a 5-run lead. You would have thought you'd had a little time to warm him up if the thing got, you know, it wasn't gonna hit a 5-run home run on the first guy up. So, but you know, it's just like, yeah, it's reflexes that he has,
right?
And it doesn't, you know, not necessarily does he think about, you know, hey, Sam Tuilavala hasn't pitched in a week or whatever. I know he did, but you know, I mean, it's a big game. Why don't we throw him? It's just, oh well, Bowman. I got that Bowman guy. Yeah, let's use him. But you know, like you said, you'd think he was better with pitchers because he was a former catcher. But you'd think he would understand the value of rest for catchers. And well, we have Yadier Molina. So, anyway. So
he's fine. He trains for 500 games a season.
Yes, he does. And honestly, let's be fair. Right now, he's hitting well enough.
That's true. But hard to take him out.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you know, Carson Kelly is actually on the major league roster. So, at least in theory. And so the Cardinals did make some call ups. Like I said, the most notable ones are probably Jack Flaherty, Zadie Alcantara. Those were the guys. Yeah, Harrison Bader returned, a couple other guys, Alberto Rosario gets to be, man, if you think Carson Kelly doesn't play, what, the third catcher in September when you're in a pennant race, I mean, what are you going to do? And then Alex Mejia coming back up as well. But I think everybody was looking, you know, obviously wanted to see Flaherty, obviously wanted to see Alcantara, and both of them had their struggles, which is to be expected. I think we often think of these young prospects, especially when they've been, well, Flaherty especially was dominating, you know, Memphis. Alcantara's had his own issues this year. But we kind of think they're just going to come up and, you know, immediately take to this. And that doesn't work that well. But unfortunately, they're going to have to learn in the middle of a pennant race how to be effective at the big league level.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, to go back to this idea that some of the players were with this direction being chosen, is that you get those guys who are going to have their first game jitters. They're going to be out of their element, maybe in a little bit over their heads. And that's great experience for them for next season, or for the season after that, it's not necessarily great for immediate results. And sometimes you'll, you know, catch lightning in a bottle and you'll get a Carlos Martinez or an Alex Reyes or somebody that comes up and is an instant success. We've seen that with a number of the prospects for the Cardinals over the last several years, but that's not the norm. And these guys are going to have to get their feet wet. They're going to have to make some mistakes to be able to learn from them and get better. So there's an excitement factor, I think, from the fans' perspective of seeing the future, seeing the potential that we keep hearing about and finding out how these guys can compete at the major league level. But there is a little bit of a letdown, perhaps, when those guys come in and, you know, you are suddenly inexplicably three games out of a wild card spot, and now you're depending on guys that are completely unproven in the roles they're being asked to play. So it can be very exciting. It can also be very frustrating when it doesn't work out as an overnight success.
As we wrap this one up, the fact is, for all the warts, all the problems, the fact that the Cardinals are only two games over 500, they sit three games out of the wild card right now. The Rockies have folded, which a number of people kind of thought they might. And, you know, the Cardinals have basically the Brewers to contend with. Again, we've kind of gotten our hopes up a couple times this season. You know, in the time when they tied the Cubs for the division lead, you know, they've had a couple of runs. We kind of thought they might have it. You know, they get a chance to play. They play the Padres, which is a bad team. And then they play inside the division for the rest of the way, which has not been kind to them. They're, you know, I think about 10 to 12 games under 500 against these teams in the Central. But I don't know. I mean, with September call-ups, with teams out of the race, are they really going to make this run?
I feel like we've been trying to guess that all season, and we've guessed very wrong thus far.
We'll get it right on the last show.
Yeah, once the season's over.
Yep.
I knew it would happen. no, you know, it is interesting to me that we've been so convinced of the idea that to make the postseason, the Cardinals were going to have to win the division because the division was so bad that no one in the NL Central was going to be able to make a push for a wild card spot. And now all of a sudden, we're looking at a Cardinals team that has slimmer and slimmer chances of the division, but very realistic opportunities to claim a wild card spot. I think the struggle is that they've had very realistic opportunities all season, and they've failed to take advantage of them. So the fact that they finished the season with the Brewers, and the Brewers are the team that's, what, 2.5 games ahead of them for a wild card spot, that could legitimately be their season in the last series of the year. So it's not as if they are not in a position to determine their own fate. It's very hard to expect them to take advantage of those opportunities that they have. So while it's certainly still a possibility, I think that it gets harder and harder to expect that they're suddenly going to be able to do something they haven't done all season.
This is true. But there are still, as we continue to point out, 7 games with the Cubs as well, and they're only 6 games back. So some wins there. Of course, you still have to go basically, you know, 5-2, 6-1 in those games, and that could be difficult. But, you know, they're playing meaningful September baseball, even for the fact that they're barely over 500. And as Cardinal fans, I mean, that's kind of what we're used to. It feels like no matter, you know, there's been years in the past, 7-07 and 08, I think, that they, you know, they struggled, but often were kind of had a bad division and stayed in the race. We're kind of used to them at least being in the hunt, and you know, at least we're seeing games that matter in September, and that's that's more than a lot of teams can say right now. I mean,
and I think it's more than we expected after, you know, the first 2 months of the season. They had one little good run in there, and all of a sudden we thought, okay, maybe they're going to turn it around, and then they failed to do that, and we thought, all right, well, the Cubs are going to run away with it, and the Cardinals are going to be 12 games out by the trade deadline, and it's going to be pretty tough to watch the rest of the year. So it's as bad as it has felt, it's maybe a little better than we sort of expected.
Being the fact that I think I've written them off like 20 times this year, different points, yeah, it's probably better than we expected. So we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, the Cardinals get 4 games with the Padres this week, and then and start their run in the Central with the Pirates on the weekend. So they've got 2 more off days this season, and we'll just have to see how it goes. At least, if nothing else, we'll see some new faces and see what these guys can do to make that push a little bit more realistic. So until next week, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.